This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Powering Through the Pandemic on BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury, and this is Powering Through the Pandemic. A lot of things we have missed during the MCO and the CMCO. One of them, of course, at the beginning, was the ability to just go outside, feel a little bit of sun on our face and on our backs. And for some people, it's not just about feeling sun on their face and sun on the backs. It's about getting into a little bit of water, paddling and keeping their feet cool. I'm talking about swimming, of course. Now, on the line with me today, I have EJ. He is the CEO and founder, I believe, of Swim in 12. Is that right, EJ?
That's right.
Now, they are a Malaysian swimming school with over 10 years of experience researching on learning psychology, water physics, and helping thousands of water phobic students around the world learn to swim in 12 hours. And that's guaranteed. So they had a problem, of course, during the MCO, the CMCO, people can't go outside, people can't swim. So they decided to do something different. They brought their program online. So that's bringing their concepts and knowledge of swimming. And it allows children to revisit concepts behind the swimming technique and the strokes to gain a visual and theoretical understanding of what they learn in the pool. EJ, thank you for joining me on the show.
My pleasure. Very happy to be here.
I've got to ask, first and foremost, and I'm sure there's a lot of people at home asking this question as to how do you teach people how to swim whilst they're sat at home in front of a screen?
Okay, so with the current MCO, the pool cannot be open, so it's totally closed. And a lot of our swimming coach cannot make a living teaching swimming. So what we did was we created a program where we teach swimming and science at the same time. So there are many times in the pool, we can tell somebody to keep their hands straight. It helps you move faster. Then when they forget about it, we just remind them. Then when it comes to MCO, what we did was we create a way to explain things in a more visual direction, where they can, let's say we tell them, keep your hands straight. And what does it look like? It looks like the shape of a ship or a sports car or a rocket or an airplane. So it cuts through air, cuts through water, and helps you move faster. So even like, so even the air, when there's more air, you will float, less air, you will sink. So this is the same concept where we show it with a Ribena pack. We put air inside, we bind it together with a jar, and we allow it to float. So when you take off the air, it starts to sink. So we can show this kind of experimentation. And at the same time, we also show how does it apply to real life. How do we apply this concept? So we show them like submarines. So if you put more air inside submarine, it floats. Take out the air, it sinks. So we create more of this kind of examples for them to relate.
Right. So these particular courses that you're doing online, is it mainly aimed at kids?
Yes, mainly aimed at kids from 7 years old to 12 years old.
Right. And what's the kind of in fact, we'll get to this in a minute, because there's a couple of little things that I want to explore first. Where did your love for swimming come from in the first place?
I started as a corporate job. I started teaching swimming for fun, for exercise. Then that's where I started discovering there's a lot of students out there who's been learning for months and couldn't get it even with official coaches. Then I started teaching for fun, and I got students to let go of the board in like first class. Third class, I could swim a proper stroke. Fourth class, and float on the back. That's what I find it interesting. Then I feel that maybe I could start experimenting on this teaching swimming program. And once I go into it, I really enjoy it. I see it takes away a lot of people's fear. It changes a lot of personality as well, from being too conservative into taking calculated risks. So I enjoy this process. So then I start teaching in condos as a freelance coach for 5 years. After 5 years, I now run a sports center. We have two branches now with 30 over coaches. So this is where we start, and I really enjoy myself throughout the whole journey.
Has it been difficult for you during the MCO and the CMCO then?
Oh, definitely. Because we are very realistic that when the Prime Minister announced 2 weeks that the pool is going to close, we look at other countries and how are they actually managing it, and realize it's going to go into months. So I start planning ahead and tell the team that our usual expense is 160 to 170,000 a month. And if I predict this thing will last at least 3 months, so I said we don't have like $500,000 to run for the next 3 months. Yeah, so I told everyone to take an unpaid leave, and then from there we started to create programs like we open up our office so people who can't afford their rent for the next 3 months they can stay in our office. We fill out the pantry so the team can eat. We start arranging loans for the next 3 months, like a 1,200 ringgit loan per month for if you want to take care of your family. And that's where you don't even need to think about paying back. Just pay back when you're ready, no interest. And we won't pay for skills. So every week that you learn new skills, we pay a 50 ringgit for new skills. And if you can apply those skills, we pay another 50 ringgit. So we create a lot of all these programs to take care of our team.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it goes after 3 months.
And what's your, I mean, this is a difficult question, but what's your team retention been like? Have you lost anybody during the period?
We considered we lost everybody because we are realistic that there's no income during these 3 months. So we tell everyone to take an unpaid leave. And if you need, feel free to look for a new job. We send them a whole list of essential services that we are operating. Then at the same time, I came up with a crazy idea. I said, come, let's teach swimming online. Yeah, this is a crazy program. And 15 of our team members volunteered. They said, okay, don't worry about paying. Let's just do this for fun. And eventually we run it. And I'm very happy within 10 days we managed to execute it. Then we took one more week to refine it before we start charging our clients. Then from there, once we start launching the paid program, we are very happy with the results. So we had at least started from 10 students to 20 students, now we've got 30 students. Then we started being a bit more ambitious and start going to different countries and like Singapore, start looking into this and say, hey, this is something that Singapore doesn't have. Let's bring it here. Last week, we just had our first students from India. So we are, it actually becomes a blessing. And as we run it, I've seen the teams, although they are volunteering, they don't take money. So I decided to just give all the income, whatever we get, minus all the Zoom costs, the company secretary costs, then from there we just pass everybody the profits.
What a great idea, though. I love the idea that you're kind of looking outside the borders of Malaysia as well and kind of looking down at Singapore and India. Have you had people making inquiries from further afield as well, not just India and Singapore, other places?
So far, not yet. We haven't did any reach out to any other countries. Sometimes by luck. Sometimes by our ex-students who migrated to other countries like Singapore, Australia, and say, hey, you're running this. Can I just explore this? And that's where we started giving them a free trial. They enjoyed it. Some of them took more initiative to share with their friends. And that's where we get more connections from different countries around the world.
Mm. So when you were kind of putting the program together, and you were kind of laying it out as to how you were going to do it, did you have any... I don't want to use the word guinea pigs, but were you testing it on students first to see how it resonated with them?
Oh, yes. And on the first, after 10 days when we launch it, we bring those who are very supportive students who are very close to us, those who write us the teacher's day card, always buying us food. So these are people who really care for us. So we know that we can get good feedback, honest feedback from them. So once we launch it, we keep tweaking based on their feedback. Until we say, hey, this is really interesting. This is practical. This is something worth paying for. And from there, we started launching. And when we run it, one of the things that I take very seriously is after MCO, when the pool is open, can we still use this? So that's why we start tweaking the content to ensure that it becomes a complementary program where you can use it even when the pool is open. So then it becomes a worthy project to work on.
That was going to be my next question. But on that note, let's take a short break. I have in the studio with me, on the telephone with me right now, EJ Yip. He is the CEO of swimin12.com, a Malaysian swimming school with over 10 years of experience researching on learning psychology, water physics, and helping thousands of water phobic students around the world learn to swim in 12 hours. Not only that, but he's taken part of his program online. More about that when we come back after this break. You are listening to Powering Through the Pandemic here on BFM 89.9.
Banish feudal mentality. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Powering Through the Pandemic on Enterprise. On the line with me right now, I have EJ Yip. He is the CEO of Swim in 12, a Malaysian swimming school with a bunch of experience, and they are now moving some of their stuff online and helping to teach kids how to swim, or assist them to swim and give them the concepts and the knowledge of swimming whilst they're online. EJ, your story was passed to me by a colleague of mine recently, and said it was a very interesting story and it was something that we should look into. Now, I have quite a strong history with swimming. When I was a kid, I had scoliosis and my hips were twisted, and swimming was the one thing that was the exercise that kind of got me motivated. And so I have a real love for swimming, even though I'm now terrible at it because I'm terribly out of practice, which is something I'll talk to you about later. How do you convince people who, have a fear of swimming and have never really wanted to do it? And I found this in Malaysia quite a lot, that not as many people in Malaysia swim as I thought might have done. How do you convince these people that it's a life skill?
So basically, when people have fear, there's so many reasons to that fear. And sometimes those reasons, they can't articulate it out. They just know that it's, oh, I'm just afraid of water. But when we, as a coach, we start to break it down, we can see actually it's a fear of falling. It's a fear of sinking, fear of pain in the nose. So there's many reasons for those fear. What we do is we slowly identify them one by one. And we slowly not only tell them what's right or wrong, we get them to experiment through very mini exercises. So through those mini exercises, like they can open their mouth in the water, they can make funny faces in the water, they start to realize that, I've never knew I could actually do that. So as we start surprising them with more and more all these cool things they can do in the water, they start to be more and more comfortable inside. So as they feel more comfortable, they will trust their coaches, and that's where they sign up for the second, the third, fourth lesson, and that's where we can get them to swim in a very short time. So we don't teach through just motivation. We're not going to that. Yeah, we don't go into the I can't do it, yes you can, I can't do it, yes you can. We don't go into that back and forth. We just show them what are the things that you can do in the water. So just try a mini experiment until they wouldn't realize it when they already shake off, don't have their feet on the ground. So that subtle way that we run it, we enjoy it very much. And students, end of the day, they don't know what's the formula. They just see it and they feel comfortable with it, and they recommend a lot of students. So we don't spend a lot of money on marketing.
Very different to my coach when I was a kid. She was the kind of coach that was like, get in the water now and give me 20 lengths, you know, and that's the kind of motivation that I had.
I see. Yeah, I learned swimming almost similarly, but I was thrown into the pool. I said, you want to live, you survive. Nowadays, I find there's a lot of students who've gone through that, but not everyone takes it the same way. So those days, we could just cry it out and we continue, then we just enjoy it later. But a lot of students nowadays, they turn into, they have this trauma effect that makes it very hard to reverse. So when we teach swimming, I started my specialization in helping students who are extremely afraid of water, those either caused by previous drowning or those who have been traumatized by the coaches or parents. So this is our specialty. So that's why I feel that maybe it works in the past, but nowadays it's the students are more sensitive, especially for kids.
So one of the issues with learning anything online or even holding meetings online is to make sure that things are efficient and communication is done efficiently. Have you had any difficulty with that, keeping students engaged whilst you're online?
Online, what we did was we break it into mini sections because we know that attention span is different for everyone. So we try to have many varieties, like we have quiz inside the session, we have experiments, we have videos. So we try not to have one single format for such a long time. Then they will lose their interest. So if we keep changing the format, it always feels like something new for them. It's the same when we are teaching swimming. You don't just give them a certain instruction and they do it until they can get it. Once we can detect a little bit of boredom, then start changing into games or take a challenge, a mini competition. So it's the same that we do online.
Right. What do you think has been your main challenge when moving it online?
I think it's more about at least getting people to imagine it's actually possible to learn some theories online, some things that are useful, that when the pool is open, they can go back and practice those skills and they learn a lot faster. So I think that initial convincing part for people to actually take a first trial lesson, I think that will be the main challenge.
Right. Have you, what's the kind of retention rate been like for the people that have signed up for your courses? Are they all coming back for second lessons and third lessons and fourth lessons?
Yes, we are very happy with that because on our second month, 90% of the students renewed. So that gave us a huge confidence boost to tell that whatever we are doing is working now. So we just need to get people to at least come and try from the free trial. Then once they sign up, it's something that they can enjoy very much and it's practical for them. So we're happy with that 90%.
I would imagine so. Mm. And what's the feedback been like from parents?
A lot of them, they said it's very different because many other centers, they have a one-way communication. The teacher's teaching, so the student's only observing. But what we're doing here is a lot more interactive, where we get students to do things like treasure hunt. That's why we talk about big surface, you move slower, small surface, you go faster. So find me an object in your home that has a big surface and small surface. So they will move around, and when they answer questions, we can get them to draw on the screen. We can get them to show a love sign on their head through what their body language. So we constantly get them to move rather than just listen. So a lot of parents are very happy about this whole mixture. And it's not just about the swim science. We also get students to exercise as well. So we have two programs, one for exercise, the other one for learning the theory part.
You genuinely sound like you have a real passion for teaching kids. Where does that come from?
I think it's just being able to deliver results and see that people can actually conquer their fear. And when people have a fear of something, it feels like a cap. It feels like there's a limitation. So if I can take away that cap, and it can start to evolve into something else. Like one of the most memorable one was an auntie at 70 years old. She observed me for a year in the condo when I was teaching. And a year later, she actually took action to learn swimming from me. And I was very happy to get her to swim in 3 to 4 months. And after that, she said, "Hey, now I can swim. I want to go into rock climbing." She's like 70 years old. Kind of inspired me. If whatever I'm doing now can help people like conquer one fear, then they will start looking into conquering other fears as well. You'll see that possibility.
Is brilliant. Yeah. That is brilliant. Now, just before we wrap up, I mean, I've got a couple of questions for you. You briefly mentioned it earlier on about when the CMCO is lifted and people start going back to using the pools. Do you think that people will still use these online courses as much, or do you already anticipate it kind of dropping off a little bit?
It will definitely drop off because most people will still prefer swimming in the pool. But once we are able to package it in a way where they learn in the pool, then there's some Q&A, there's some examinations to take. Then they will learn more. And once they can see the value that they can actually learn faster, I think people will start to go into both the swimming and the online. Mm. And I can see it as a complementary program as well for people around the world. Where other countries, when they see it, they are teaching swimming and they can use our program to learn the theory part where they don't usually teach it that way. So I think it's useful in those scenarios as well.
And how do you expect to kind of let's use the dirty word of monetize? You know, do you intend to kind of monetize it at some point?
For now, I don't really think about the money part. For now, I'm always thinking about the value part first. But the money is still important because at the end of the day, there's a lot of cost to cover in getting people to develop the content, the technologies needed, the equipment's needed to invest. So definitely we'll monetize it, but not for like a hefty profit just to pay a big bonus for myself. But it's more for to paying for all those small equipments and constant investment to make it better. So definitely we'll monetize it, but it's just how we balance it and reward the students back again with more value.
EJ, thank you very much for this conversation today. You've really inspired me.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Keep up the good work, my friend.
Thank you.
So on the phone with me right now, I've had EJ Yeep. He is the CEO of swimin12.com. Check out their website. They have a Facebook page as well. It is I Love Swim in 12. Head over there and find out some more information. My name is Rich Bradbury. This has been Powering Through the Pandemic here on BFM 89.9.
Powering Through the Pandemic on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.